From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome to Cairo Nights. I am your host, Jake Skorheim. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. I don't know if you knew this, but this is like, let's see here. Let me add up John and Sherry's show. That's 4 hours plus my show tonight. 7 hour. This is a 7 hour Jake marathon on Cairo Radio, which is fantastic, I'm sure, for all of you guys. I hope you're loving it. I hope you're just thrilled to have you only have 3 more hours of me right now. Just 3 more hours. So savor that time. Are you guys savoring it?
How about no? Okay.
All right. That kind of stinks. Whatever. All right. That's fine. We have a great show coming up. So I hope you guys enjoy it. We have a lot of fun. I cannot believe how much stuff that we're probably not even going to get to tonight, because there's that much great, interesting audio to play. There's like amazing Neuralink things, amazing advancements into the future. They are operating. This is really cool, actually. Like, they have the first functional brain chip that has been implanted into somebody. I'm going to get into that in just a minute. I'm going to talk about, Oprah is talking about some stuff that I find it fascinating. I find it really interesting. She now is talking about how she's using, I don't know if it's Ozempic or if it's Wegovy or however you pronounce these, weight loss drugs. It's the new fad. People are really excited about weight loss drugs. Are you guys thinking that this is a good idea? We'll get into that a little bit. We got some audio. We'll take a weight loss journey with Oprah, and we'll figure out what's going on here. And just a ton of other stuff. So we'll get to that in just a little bit. But right now, first thing first, we always do a trivia clip at the start of the show. And so I'm going to play you this clip. It's from a movie I love. I hope you guys like it too, so you know it. You can guess on the text line, 888-973-5476. Or you can just stick around. And you can listen to the top of the next hour, the news roundup. They will tell you, not they, I will tell you in the news roundup what the answer to this trivia clip is. So I'm going to play it for you now. Very best of luck. Here it is.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
May God have mercy on your soul. All right, let's get right into it. Are you guys confused about four-way stops? Apparently, a lot of people are. Listen to this headline. Chris Sullivan has this great story on MyNorthwest.com. It reminds me of a funny story that I have about four-way stops, but also about like just the way that everybody is adding now. Instead of four-way stops, often, you are now seeing them throw in roundabouts. Very European. But they're really being adopted here. And I think I think they're working. I think people like them. I certainly like them. But not everybody is on board. And I have a funny story about that in a second. But first, from Chris Sullivan's story on MyNorthwest.com. You guys can check it out there. He says, there's no mystery to how four-way stops work. So why do so many people mess this simple maneuver up? It's a great question, Chris. I myself have found myself confused at a four-way stop from time to time. Because you have to figure out, like, all right, who gets there first? If we arrive at the same time, who has the right of way? Chris explains all this because he's like the traffic guy. He knows everything that's going on in traffic. This is what he has to explain. He says, I have never understood why so many people get freaked out at four-way stops. They are relatively easy to understand, but many drivers remain confused. Yes, thank you, Chris. I'm one of those drivers. I'm bringing this up, he says, because a big Choke Points fan named Catherine asked me to go over the rules. Thank you, Catherine, and thank you, Chris. For those of you following at home, this is found from section 3-23. You don't care about the sections. As the guide points out, no one has the right of way. Drivers must yield the right of way to others. The general rule is simple. The driver who gets to the intersection goes first. Everyone knows that. That means that the driver who comes to a complete stop first. None of this rolling through nonsense, according to Chris. If two cars arrive at the same time, aha, this is where it gets trickier, aha, the driver to the right goes first. That's very good. Now, this only works if everyone is using their turn signal so everyone knows where everyone is intending to go. Catherine's question was a little more specific. She said, what happens if you have the right of way, but there is a pedestrian in the mix? Drivers must always yield to a pedestrian, Chris says. He says the driver must wait for the pedestrian to clear. Here's a quick question. I'm going to take myself out of reading this for a second. Do people really not know this? I'm not trying to make fun of Chris. I'm just saying, like, I think people get that when a pedestrian is in front of your car, you're not supposed to drive. You're not supposed to run over. You don't have the right of way so much that you can drive over a person. That's not what he's saying. Another driver can enter the intersection while the first driver is waiting for the pedestrian to pass. But then that first driver doesn't lose his or her place in the queue. That driver gets to go once the pedestrian is cleared. All right, that's nice. The whole who gets there first question doesn't start over for this driver. And this doesn't just apply to four-way stops, but also intersections where there are no stop signs, yield signs, or traffic signals, like a roundabout, I'm guessing. I mean, roundabouts are still a little confusing. I have a bunch of roundabouts. I live in Snohomish County, and I think, I would guess, that the city planners in Snohomish County, maybe a couple years ago, when they realized that so many people, probably during the pandemic, when they realized that so many people who were working from home were now going to be moving out of the big cities, also just because living in big cities has a lot of, they got a lot of issues down in places like Seattle. Like, we're down in Seattle right now, but I just pop into Seattle to do this show. I live out of town for a lot of reasons. One of those reasons is traffic. I don't like it. And when you live up north like I do, or you live down south like many of my listeners do, you got a lot less traffic, especially if you can find yourself in one of the neighborhoods. It's lovely. I highly recommend it. On the east side, they got to figure it out. So roundabouts, Snohomish County. Let's get back to the roundabouts for a second. Snohomish County, I don't know when it was, probably during the pandemic when everybody started moving out of the big cities and filling up these northern and southern and eastern cities. They said, hey, you know what? We got a lot of folks coming. We don't want to be sitting here at the traffic light forever and ever and ever, or these four-way stops. What if we put in these roundabouts? They seem to like them in Europe. Why don't we give them a shot? So they did. So they put in all these roundabouts, and then they started to get tricky. They're not just circles anymore. Roundabouts now have like circle eight roundabouts. They have like star-shaped roundabouts. I don't even know why they call them round. I guess they've got a curve to them that qualifies as a roundabout. They are massive. Some of these are like really confusing because not only are they a roundabout where they have like 5 points of entry, they also have two or three weird exit lanes at every single point of entry and exit. They also have a path, the one that I'm thinking of up north, they have a path that like goes through for pedestrians so pedestrians can walk across, which is very confusing to me because there's no stop sign. And old people don't understand roundabouts. Like really old people. It's just like, you know that phrase, you can't teach an old dog new tricks? They should have something about old people and roundabouts. Same kind of deal. I was behind, and I'm not trying to be ageist here. That's not my intention. I'm preaching the truth to you guys right now, and you know this is true. I was following this old lady the other day through this roundabout, and she had, God bless her, she had no business being behind the wheel of a car. We can have a whole separate conversation about how hard it is to get your aging parents or aging grandparents or whoever it might be to admit that they should no longer be safely driving a vehicle. But this lady, I don't think she should have been driving a vehicle. So we arrive at, I'm right behind her, and she's in, I don't know, she's in an old lady car. She's probably in a Subaru or something. Those are fine automobiles, by the way. They advertise on the station. I'm not saying they're all old lady cars. I'm just saying that in particular, women of a certain age really like to drive Subarus because they're very safe cars. They got a lot of great safety features. So I highly recommend them. My mother loves them. All right, back to this story. I'm in a intersection, not an intersection. I'm at a roundabout, like a really confusing roundabout that's got all these different ways that you can go. I mean, you could always just like merge the same way, but like it's confusing. She's standing there. She stops, which again, you're not supposed to do if there's no traffic, because there was no traffic in the roundabout. You're supposed to just go. That's the whole point of why they're successful. That's why people love them, because you can just go. So what she does is she arrives at the entrance to the roundabout. And now she's very confused. And I can tell this because she just stops. And she's not moving. And of course, I'm behind her and I'm trying to be nice. And I can see in the rearview mirror the reflection of her old lady face. And I know to myself, all right, she's probably a little confused. Poor dear. I don't know. I'm not trying to be mean to old people. But anyway, so she's sitting there and she's very confused. And then she decides, because she's not sure which area she should go to. And again, she's probably like 107 years old, should not have been driving a vehicle. Instead of going and merging into the roundabout, as one does, she just drives right over it. And I was like, what is this lady doing? And I'm watching her, and she hits the curb, because the roundabouts still have curbs. She hits the curb, her car just goes bloop, like pops up, and she just floors it, just keeps going. Now, I can understand. This is a very scary situation. I don't know how much of this she's aware of. Again, I wouldn't recommend that she be behind the wheel of this vehicle. And I'm surprised that she was, given what she did in this roundabout. And maybe this was the turning point. Everybody sometimes hits a low. Maybe she hit this. Maybe this was her breaking point. She said, you know what? When she got back from this trip, in my brain, I'm imagining, in my best case scenario for her, she got back from this trip. She gets back to her house. She sets down the keys and she goes, you know what? No more for me. No more driving for me, because I just drove over a roundabout because I couldn't do it. This was very scary. But she's just like, thank God there was nobody in the roundabout. Thank God there was nobody trying to walk through. There's no other cars. She just got lucky, I think. She just drove right over it. And I never saw her again, so I'm hoping she's still okay. But roundabouts can be tricky. And four-way stops apparently can also be tricky. So if you want to learn how to use a four-way stop correctly, if you're interested in that, Chris Sullivan's got a great interview, a great article on MyNorthwest.com. You guys should check it out there. All right, really quick, I want to get to something else. I found this so cool and uplifting. I love stories about the future. I love thinking about the future. I love technology. This has all of that. Also like Elon Musk. I think he's a very interesting guy, and I like him. He co-founded this company called Neuralink. And Neuralink just released this video. They uploaded it to X, this live stream, and they show a Neuralink engineer sitting beside this 29-year-old guy. His name is Nolan Arbaugh. He's sitting there in his wheelchair. He's a quadriplegic. He's sitting in front of a computer, and he is playing chess, something he loves to do. But he has not been able to play chess and move the pieces or move the cursor on the computer with anything other than one of those little straws that people who are paraplegics can move things around. You know, they have those computer hookups. That's been the only way since he got paralyzed in a skydiving accident, it sounds like. And he has been unable to, you know, do a lot of the things he loves. So Neuralink inputted a computer chip into his brain, and now he is able to move the cursor on this thing. It's unbelievable if you watch this. It's so cool. Here he is introducing himself.
My name's Nolan Arbaugh. I'm 29 years old. About 8 years ago, I was in kind of a freak diving accident and dislocated my C4, C5. So I'm a complete quadriplegic. So I'm paralyzed from below the shoulders. I have no sensation or movement below my level of injury, so below my shoulders.
He says diving accident. I don't know if he means skydiving. He could mean diving into a pool. I don't know. But anyway, he is sitting there and he introduced himself. And then he shows off moving the cursor around the computer. Now, you can't actually see what he's doing because this is radio. This is an audio medium. You might be listening on the podcast, in which case we also appreciate that. But he's moving the cursor around as he's talking. And you're just sitting there going like, how is he doing this? Well, he explains.
Do you want to explain a little bit what's going on here?
Yeah. So I love playing chess, and so this is one of the things that y'all have enabled me to do, something that I wasn't able to really do much the last few years, especially not like this. I had to use like a mouse stick and stuff, but now it's all being done with my brain. If y'all can see the cursor moving around the screen, that's all me, y'all. It's pretty cool, huh?
Actually, can you pause the song just for the audio coming through? And that was also done with your brain?
Yep. It's all brain power up there.
What was that song playing? I recognize that. Was that Virtual? Is it Virtual Insanity? Is that that Jamiroquai song from a million years ago? I wonder if that was deliberate. Anyway, he describes what it's like using this, and I thought his description was pretty fun.
So we started out with trying out a few different things. We basically went from what we call kind of differentiating like imagined movement versus attempted movement. So a lot of what we started out with was attempting to move. So I would attempt to move my right hand, left, right, forward, back. And from there, I think it just became intuitive for me to start imagining the cursor moving. Basically, it was like using the force on a cursor, and I could get it to move wherever I wanted, just stare somewhere in the screen, and it would move where I wanted it to, which was such a wild experience.
It's so cool watching him do this, and you can see that, like, this has just changed this guy's life. He went through something, you know, unbelievable and tragic when he lost the ability to move his arms and legs. And now he's sitting there able to do this with just his brain power. Elon Musk commented on the video, and I'll just paraphrase what he said, but basically he was saying, like, in the long future, like in the future at some point, sounds like maybe it's still a ways out, but it's still possible, he says, they will be able to use this technology that they now have implanted into this guy's brain. He's the first successful person to do this. They will be able to use the same thing. They're sending signals, right? His body is interacting with that computer and he's talking to the computer. So how do we send signals around our body? How do I get my limbs to move? How do I get my mouth to open? All these different things. These are electrical charges that are being sent from our brains. Someday, Elon Musk says, they will be able to use this technology, these computer chips, to reroute around the parts that are no longer working when somebody gets paralyzed, so that somebody could send those signals down to the hand to move the arm and to maneuver the fingers or whatever they're doing to stand up and walk. And it will be seamless, just as if they are doing it normally, but they would otherwise maybe be paralyzed. But because of this new technology, in the future, maybe they will be able to fix that problem. I think that's so cool. I love that they're studying this type of stuff. And, I wish them well, and I hope they continue having great success. All right, really fast, I got to play this audio for you. I just saw this before we got on the air, and I thought this was very, I don't know what it is about Russell Wilson, but I'm just like, I want to root for the guy, but I have a tough time rooting for the guy because he posts kind of these cringy videos at times. He just posted a new video. It's getting lots of jokes from fans, from NFL fans on the internet. They're very funny. I'll read you a few of them. But here's the video. It's basically Russell Wilson. It looks like he's at some sort of a training facility. It looks super, super nice. I don't know. It looks like Hawaii. I don't know where it's at, but it's beautiful. It's like a well-manicured field. The guy's super rich, so he should be spending his time at these places. This is where I would be if I had Russell Wilson money. But he's working out. He's got some cool shades on, and he's posted the video with some rap music. And then he's, and I don't know the song, but, it's catchy. I like it. And he's doing this workouts. People are not loving this video, and it's kind of funny. Here's a little clip of what it sounds like.
G-Block, all we know is red rum, red rum.
So this is kind of like a hype video somebody might post just to get fans excited. You might remember that Russell Wilson was recently fired by the Broncos, even though they owed him a ton of money. They said, listen, we will still pay you that money. We just can't have you part of the team anymore because we got to rebuild. We got to try to figure out a way to have some success. He was with the Broncos for 2 years. He is now, just recently, he signed to play with the Steelers. And so he's getting excited. He's talking about the Steelers. So he releases this video, and instantly fans were like, all right, this has a very specific look to it. Who does this remind us of? And right away they were saying, this has very much Uncle Rico vibes. Do you remember Uncle Rico, Napoleon Dynamite?
Back in 82, I used to be able to throw a pigskin a quarter mile.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over the mountains? A coach would have put me in fourth quarter. We'd have been state champions, no doubt. No doubt.
No doubt. Somebody else posted, and this is pretty funny. This guy whose name is Mile High Greco, I assume he's a Broncos fan. He says, that's weird. Usually he runs in a circle and takes a sack, which is, unfortunately, Russell did that a lot when he was playing with the Broncos. All right, we got a lot of stuff coming up tonight. Matty B, tell him what we got.
Coming up on tonight's edition of Cairo Nights, we'll be joined by Jason Rance of The Jason Rance Show with a conversation on loneliness. Don Lemon has a somewhat awkward interview with controversial billionaire Elon Musk. We'll find out what went down there. And we'll find out what website is pulling out of the state of Texas and why. That's all headed your way on tonight's edition of Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. I have a very special guest on with me right now. His name is Jason Rance. He's a great friend. We do a double shot video every single day. You guys should check that out on Instagram or X, wherever you get your social media stuff. He hosts The Jason Rance Show on 770 KTTH. He's written a great book called What's Killing America. Is there anything I left out?
Probably.
Yeah. All right.
I'm on Fox.
Jason Rance, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Two nights in a row. That's kind of impressive.
Yes.
I've impressed myself there.
Well, you've impressed me. I wanted to have you on because I am just interested in having this conversation with people. I have three kids. I'm soon to have four kids. My wife is 2 months away from our fourth kid being born. Should be exciting. Four boys I'm going to have.
I have been reading a lot lately about this kind of epidemic of loneliness that we have in this country. And I wanted to, you're laughing as you're saying that.
Jason, I wanted you to come in.
I'm fascinated to talk about loneliness.
No, please tell us about how you're single.
No. Although I am interested in that. But I do find loneliness fascinating as it relates to the next generation, because I think loneliness for the next generation is a complete different thing than it is for people like us who were born before technology was shoved into our hands at birth, which now it kind of is. It's like shoved into your hands at birth. And so do you have any thoughts on that? Because I read this really great article, maybe just as like a primer to get us started off here, a jumping off point. In The Atlantic, this guy, he's an author. His name is Jonathan Haidt. He's working on a book right now about teen mental health. Are you aware of this?
I'm familiar with him. Yeah.
So anyway, he's done this really, really deep dive, and I found it really fascinating. He's done this really, really deep dive into when teen mental health and kind of this loneliness that's happening has really like just completely fallen off the cliff. It has gotten like, I guess that analogy doesn't really work. It's gotten really bad, so you could say falling off the cliff, but it's spiked.
It's just too which suicidal like a, ideation.
Yes, something. Yeah. Anyway, what he basically says was what he looked at all this data, and he went back and he found that for adolescents, basically in the early 2000s, you have this like inflection point where right around the time that cell phones become prominent, which is like 2007 is the first iPhone that comes out, kind of changes the world.
Well, in 2000, that was really starting to be into the world of Facebook, the original version of it. So we were just starting to dip our toes into
but
social media,
but it wasn't accessible in your pocket.
Correct.
Yeah. So social media does kind of like have its birth in the early 2000s. But until then, when you look back at like anxiety levels of youth, it's still pretty stable through the early 2000s, but then right around 2010, it skyrockets. And listen to some of these numbers. Let's see. Between 2010 and 2019, it rose by more anxiety in adolescents, rose by more than 50%. The suicide rate rose by 48% in adolescents between the ages of 10 to 19. And for girls, because social media is far more damaging, it seems, to especially young girls, between the ages of 10 to 14, suicide rates rose by 131% between 2010 and 2019.
I will give a caveat to all of those that I think probably is in the book. The percentages don't always equate to as large of a number.
Yeah.
In reality, it's still high.
It's still a big number, but
But when you go from 1 to 9, you say, okay, well, you don't want 9, but that is not a huge number.
But it's not 500,000.
Exactly. So not that it's not a problem, and it all makes total sense, right? I mean, some of it you could probably explain that, you know, the stigma attached to anxiety and other potential mental health concerns didn't go away completely, but we started to talk about it more often. And so maybe some people decided to speak up for the first time, but they were feeling it this entire time. We just didn't know it. But I do think that social media in a general sense has created this sense of, I don't even know if I would identify it as anxiety. I think some people do, but it's the whole FOMO. It's the fear of missing out. And you now see everyone, quote unquote, living their best lives.
Yes.
And you're not experiencing that, even though they're not experiencing it. It's all a show that they want you to think that they're experiencing when they're really not. And they're just as lonely as you are. But you're now about impressing invisible people, and you're one of those invisible people that someone else is trying to impress, and it just leads to these feelings of inadequacy within one's own life.
This is really interesting because part of this article talks about that. The University of Chicago actually did this study, and they interviewed, I think it was 1,000 college students, and they looked at the University of Chicago, and they said, hey, we want to ask you how much it would cost us to buy your social media account from you for a month. So you cannot use it for a month. We will take control of it. Would you just give it to us? How much would it cost you if you wouldn't just give it to us? And most of the students that they spoke to said, well, you'd have to pay me a fair amount of money to get rid of my social media account, because that's how I keep in touch with people, this fear of missing out that you just mentioned. And then they said, all right, well, let me ask you a different question. They're trying to basically get to like they're trying to figure out what's the monetary value of this? Like, how much do you actually value this thing? Then they said, well, what if we told you that of all of your friends, they have given us access already to their social media accounts. We've shut them all down. They cannot use them for 4 weeks. Now we're coming to you and we're saying, now, if none of your friends are using social media, for the next 4 weeks, how much would it cost us to keep you from using social media for the next month? And the number is zero. They said generally less than zero, which means that they'd almost pay you to not use social media. Kids, even like teenagers, college students, they have this inherent understanding that this thing is not adding value to their lives. It's not making them happier. Mm-hmm. What they're afraid of is that this is the way that they stay connected socially to people, which is really interesting because, again, when you and I were growing up, which is not super far off from when these kids were growing up because we're so young.
28.
Yeah,
14 years.
Yeah, 20, and me for 12. But for us, we had to figure out how to stay connected to our different communities that we were in, but it wasn't through cell phones. It was like physically, like, yeah. All right, how do I stay in contact with people?
I remember not too long ago, it's probably 8-10 years ago, I was caught up in what everyone was doing on Facebook at the time, which was checking into places and tagging who you're with. So let's say you go to a bar or a restaurant, whatever it is.
Check in at like, yeah.
And
yeah, totally.
I recognized as I was doing it, the reason I was doing it, which is almost like, see, I have a life. And I decided I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm just done. And I stopped tagging myself. I'm not even on right now. I'm not on Facebook. And I haven't been for a long time.
Well, you're not a grandmother. That's why.
Yeah. But I mean, you don't usually just give things up that you've become addicted to.
Yeah.
But I remember just making this conscious choice of no longer doing that. And then people started to comment about, what's going on? You're not going anywhere anymore.
Okay. What happened?
I'm still doing precisely what I was doing before. I'm still seeing the same people that I've been seeing before, but I'm not like weirdly bragging about it on social media. And then people are like, oh my God, something's up with you.
The performative nature of it,
it's all a performance. Yeah.
Yes. And you felt like, you know, I'm really tired of feeling like I have to show the world.
Well, just impress people. It's like,
that
I don't care.
To dinner at a restaurant.
Precisely. Like I don't care if you know that I went to a restaurant with a friend. Like, yeah. I don't care if you know that. I mean, I don't need you to know that. I don't get anything of value of you knowing that. It's not building up my lack of self-esteem or whatever it is. So I'm like, I don't need to do it anymore. And that was also because other people were doing it. I was judging them for doing it.
So we're in a unique position. We're in a unique position here. Like, because we grew up without it, but then we grew up at a time where it was kind of directed at us.
Yeah.
And we were the ones who were kind of the experiment.
We were the target.
We were the target, yeah, to start with. So we've now had it in our life for like half of our life, basically. And at the same time, we remember a completely different world where it didn't exist at all and nobody even had ever mentioned social media. I didn't even hear the term social media until like sometime after 2003 or four, probably. Mm-hmm. So now as we're looking at like this next generation of kids who are growing up in a world where it is everywhere and it's ubiquitous and everybody has it, knowing that it has these harmful effects, like how do you help somebody who's younger figure out how to navigate that weird, tricky world? Like, what advice can I give as a parent to my four kids?
You talk to them about it. And I feel like that's usually the answer that no one goes to because it maybe feels awkward or you're wondering how to have that conversation. But that's 100% the conversation. Just be direct with them.
Yeah.
Say, this device is going to make you seriously lonely if you don't moderate the way that you use it. And then obviously when we're talking about very young kids like your kids, you're the parent. You're in total charge.
No, I keep them away from it. They're not having it. I told them already, and I've said this on my show many times, but I'm not going to let my kids have a smartphone until they're old enough to get one on their own when they're like 18.
Flip phone until then, and it only makes one call to parents.
Doodlebug.
Yeah. So I don't know if that's the right move because it might push them into tech faster than you might think.
They're going to fetishize it.
Well, yeah, because they're going to see other people doing it and they're going to like, oh man, why can't I do it? They're going to desire it more. So I probably wouldn't go that far. However, I do think moderating the amount of use and talking to them from an early age about its impact and how they should be using it, I do think that actually helps.
Yeah.
But many times, parents don't want to have conversations with their kids. They're texting them all day anyway.
Totally.
And they don't want to have the honest, upfront conversation because you and I, when we were dealing with social media, this was the greatest part about it. It wasn't used the way that it's currently being used. When we had like MySpace, you were posting emo songs maybe to tell people that you felt a little depressed and you needed a hug. And people then would actually give you that hug. And you're spreading, you know, music and photos. And that was pretty much it.
But you were spreading it to people that you physically had access to in the real world.
These were all real people that you knew, not complete strangers. In fact, it would be weird if someone you didn't know reached out to you on like MySpace or Facebook, like, who the hell are you? Why are you talking? Like, that was the weird thing.
Yeah, you'd be turned off by it. And
it's
now
no longer it.
You're thrilled.
Yeah,
you're like, oh, great. Yeah,
this is an interesting person.
More followers
look
today.
At me. Now I have 200 more friends. They don't know you from Jack walking down the street. Like, they have no clue who you are. You're just a random dude.
So weird. What a weird. What a weird world we live
in. And it's
now.
Also different for you and I because we have to be in this space. You choose not really to be all that much in the space, like especially on the Twitter side.
Yeah.
And Instagram, actually everywhere now that I think about
it,
you almost never post.
Yeah. No, we post. I post sometimes.
Yeah, but I have to live in that space for what it is I do, and I hate it, and I recognize how much I hate it, and yet I also can't really
stop. It's a necessary evil category.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And I wish it wasn't. I wish I can get, like if I only had to use Instagram, I'd be happy. They know exactly what I like, and I'm able to convince myself not to get jealous of someone else's like video post. All I use Instagram for, adorable dog videos. I can't get enough of the parent coming home from spending time overseas.
Yeah, I love those.
You know, visit them in school and embarrass the hell out of the kids. But they don't care because they love the person so much.
And the kids really love it. The kids don't know it's embarrassing in the moment.
Exactly. They'll know a few years later. But in the moment, they don't. And like hair care videos.
Yeah.
It's literally all I'm watching on Instagram. And
I'm nice
happy.
You're nice enough to send me videos of people getting into stupid accidents. Those are funny too.
Yeah. I follow an account called Kids Getting Hurt. And it is the funniest account. It's all kids. They're all fine at the end of it. Although sometimes you're like, how the hell did you just survive that? It's all kids just getting injured. And I send that. I think that's why my producer left. I would not stop sending
those
videos.
These are making me uncomfortable. I don't want these anymore.
I'm working with a sociopath.
Yeah, the internet sucks, but it's also kind of fun. All right, that's Jason Rantz from The Jason Rantz Show.
You can follow me on Instagram and on Twitter.
Yeah,
or
check him out.
Jason Rantz with a Z.
On all the social media platforms. But don't let your kids see any of it because kids shouldn't be near the internet. I don't know. All right, we got a lot more coming up. Stick around. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. I played a little bit of this clip the other day, but I want to play it for you again. This was really interesting to me. So President Biden recently was giving some speeches. And he's on the campaign trail. He's out there pressing the flesh. He's kissing babies. He's doing whatever politicians do. And he's trying to get people to vote for him. And so you go to these places. In this case, it's in Saginaw, Michigan. I don't know what you're doing in Saginaw, Michigan, but he's got, let's see here. He's talking to the Saginaw City Council. He's also talking with the Saginaw Public Schools Board of Education. Apparently, at least their members own this big place where he's given the speech. So he was at this Victorian mansion, this really beautiful setting. It looks really nice. And he's talking to all these people on this big covered front porch. And then, and this is the weird part that I was gonna tell you guys about. And I found this just interesting because I'm not a member of the press, but I am in a position where I can ask people questions like any adult could. Certainly a member of the press, like an official journalist, I would think would have questions for the president and want those questions answered. The weird part is at these events where Biden has agreed you can hear this in the clip I'm about to play for you. He has decided he's going to answer questions from somebody in the crowd there. Has asked him like, oh, can we take some questions? And apparently he says yes. You can hear somebody in the crowd say, hey, we're going to take some questions now. And it looks like maybe a college student or I don't know, it could be a teacher or something. I'm bad at guessing ages. And then his handlers step in. They say, great, just a second. And they walk the press out of there. You can hear them. They usher the press out. Listen to this clip. This just makes no sense to me. This was a March 14th campaign stop. This is Saginaw, Michigan. I do not understand this.
We're going to take a few questions.
So you hear that. We're going to take a few questions. And now listen to his handlers.
Questions.
Thank you, press.
Thank you, press.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, press.
Back in the vehicles.
Back to the cars.
Back to the cars.
Thank you.
Back to the cars.
Back to the cars.
Thank you, press.
We're happy
thank
to
you,
walk
press.
Home.
Thank you, press.
We have to go this way. Thank you.
Thank you,
press. Thank you, press. Get out of here, press. No questions, press. Isn't that strange? Shouldn't the president of the United States be able to answer questions from the press without his handlers worrying that something is going to go horribly wrong? That seems bizarre to me. It's so bizarre. I just do not understand it. Here's the bigger question that I don't understand. Why is it? And I don't care if you're a Republican. I don't care if you're a Democrat. I don't care how you vote. I just want you listening to this show. That's all I want. I want you to be entertained and listening to this show. But here's my question.
if this was Trump, if this is Biden, it doesn't matter. When your handlers come out and tell the press that you're not even allowed to be here, I'm sorry. Are the press not allowed to be there? Am I ill-informed about how it works? Don't we have a free press? Why doesn't one of the members of these press organizations say, you know what? No, I'm not going to be shushed away by some 25-year-old White House intern. I'm not going away. I'm going to ask some questions if I want to ask some questions. Or I'm just going to listen to other people asking questions. What's the problem with that? All right, we got a lot more coming up on the show. Stick around. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.